सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरि So yesterday we came up to this point that there are five modes of the mind. The first one is kshipta, second one is kshipta means scattered, second one is mudha means darkening or dull, then vikshipta. So Vishishta Rupena Kshipta or Viparitena Kshipta means it is sometimes gathered, sometimes scattered, then Ekagra, one-pointed, and Niruddha means where all the vrittis have stopped functioning. That is the subject matter of this Yoga Sutra. We will discuss that later. Now, Vyasa, the commentator, goes a little further to explain the three constituents of the mind. And at this point, we have to also take an analytical look into the whole mind itself. Problem about gaining knowledge with the help of mind is that when we want to know something, the object of knowledge is there, separate from us, and we are the subject, the knower. And the process which leads us to this knowledge is called knowledge. In each field of cognition, this is true. But here, in case of studying the mind, the problem arises when the mind has to study itself. So, subjectifying and objectifying the mind at the same time, this is a mind-boggling proposition, they say. But one has to do that, and therefore we have to study the mind analytically to some extent so that we know how it is possible, how it is going to be achieved. There must be some trick, there must be some way which will lead us to such type of proposition that the mind will study itself. So with the help of the mind, we have to study the mind. So, Vyasa tells us that let us look at the mind itself. So, what are the constituents of the mind? We know that the mind is constituted of three things, three gunas, they are three forces. Like in physical science we know about forces. Here also these are three forces which make the mind. They are called gunas. Gunas means which ties and pulls. They are called forces. Sattva, Rajas and Tamas. These are the three gunas. Tamas means it is fully dull, that condition. Rajas means active. And sattva means tranquil. So it is difficult to explain what they are, but let me try to make it a little bit clear. Suppose we have three circles drawn on the paper, three circles. One is a circle without anything in it, just a circle. So, if we are asked to look at this circle, what would be our feeling? When you look at a circle which does not have anything inside it, just a circle, look at it, what is your feeling? then immediately we shift our eyes to the next circle where there are so many dots in the circle. Now someone asks us to count the dots in the circle. What would be the feeling? I will feel disturbed. How many dots are there in the circle? So immediately the mind is disturbed. Now see the difference. The feeling which we had looking at the first circle and the feeling which we have now looking at this circle with so many dots. This is our experience. So the first expression, experience, is the experience of sattva guna, tranquility. Mind is calm looking at the circle. Second experience is that of activity. So that is rajas, means disturbance. Mind has become disturbed, active. And there is a third circle with all hatched line. This looks boring lines, boring. So mind becomes dull. So these are the three experiences. They are forces, they force the mind to take a certain state. Like the first one was the state of sattva, second one is the state of rajas, and third one is the state of tamas. These are the three things which together make the mind. The same mind has got these three things inside it. And when the sattva guna is predominant, then the mind is quiet. When rajoguna is predominant, then the mind is active. When tamoguna is predominant, the mind becomes dull. These are the three different states of the mind according to the gunas. Sattva guna represents knowledge and light. Knowledge and light comes when the mind is tranquil, not before that. And rajoguna says that mind becomes active, means it helps to achieve things in this world and it makes us dynamic. And tamoguna makes us lazy, sleepy, all these things. So more toxin gathers in the body. But these are the three constituents of the mind. Now this mind has three levels also. So mind is made of three gunas. Now we will try to find the levels of the mind. It has three levels. One is called a conscious level, means in the waking state we are now conscious, listening or speaking, whatever it may be. We are conscious. So the waking state. So mind is in the waking state. And when we are dreaming something, then the mind is in subconscious state, dream state, conscious and subconscious. And there is another state called superconscious. There is no state as unconscious. In modern Western psychology, they use this word unconscious, collective unconscious, like that. But unconscious state is a state of the conscious mind. When the conscious mind goes to sleep, it becomes unconscious. When the conscious mind is put to sleep with the effect of anesthesia, that is called unconscious. So unconscious does not exist as such. It is a state of the conscious mind. So there is a state which is called subconscious. Subconscious is below the conscious level. Let us try to find the difference between these three. So when the mind is supposed sleeping in the dream state, we are dreaming something. In the dream I saw that a tiger was chasing me. So suddenly the sleep breaks and I come back to waking state. What happens? I look back and see that the dream was a dream, unreal. Dream was unreal. But when I was in the dream, I cannot say that the dream was unreal. But when I am back in the waking state, then the dream state becomes unreal. What type of unreality it is? Compared to the waking state, dream state becomes unreal. Otherwise, when I was in the dream state, then waking state was unreal for me. So, as our experience says, that when we come out of the dream state to the waking state, then the dream state becomes unreal. That is everyone's experience. Now, there will come a similar experience when we are able to wake up from the waking state itself. That is called awakened state. When we wake up from the waking state, then that is called awakened state or enlightened state. And there the consciousness is called superconscious state. So mind becomes superconscious at the awakened state. So this is one example or comparison we can give. Otherwise, it is very difficult because superconscious state is everyone's experience, but people are waiting for that. So we cannot just differentiate between waking state and the superconscious state or awakened state. But comparing between the dream state and waking state, we know what type of awakening it will become. And there the mind realizes, becomes enlightened. We will come to more and more graphic ideas or pictures of this later on. But now, these are the three states of the mind. Dream state, deep sleep, waking state and superconscious state. Now, subconscious, superconscious and conscious. Now, there is an experiment. In modern medicine and in the field of artificial intelligence, they have seen that when the post-operation recuperation of a patient depends much on the atmosphere in the operation theater. If the doctor and nurses speak inspiringly during the time of operation, then the post-operation recuperation becomes faster. What happens then? How does the patient know about this inspiring things, what happened when he was unconscious under the effect of anesthesia? So the conscious mind became unconscious, but the subconscious mind was awake and it steals information. Conscious mind can supply the subconscious mind with information. Otherwise also the subconscious mind can steal information. This is a very, very practical thing in spiritual life in all fields. In medical science or psychology, they use a term, neuro-linguistic programming, NLP. That means the nerves are so trained with the help of the words. We say our diseases are psychosomatic. Mind and body is connected. So nerves, our words, they are also connected. And with the help of them, we can program things. Like, see, some people are in the company of bad people. So they learn a peculiar jargon of that company. Some words they use, and it becomes very, very easy for them to use that word. But if we change the company and go to other people in a good company, then we slowly forget about those words and learn new words. So similarly, with the help of the conscious mind, we can train up the subconscious mind. So subconscious mind is always awake and it is the sheet of all our impressions. So these are the three levels. We will talk about it further. So I am not going into detail now. These are the three levels of the mind. Then there are four faculties of the mind. The same mind works in four different ways. Suppose when I am speaking, I am a speaker. When I am listening, I am in the audience, I am a listener. When I am driving, the same person, I am a driver. Similarly, the same mind discharges different activities. So, the faculties of the mind, according to Vedanta and Yoga Sutra, there are four faculties of the mind. One is called manas, means just thinking mind. I am just sitting the vikshipta stage, no, kshipta stage. I am just sitting there and lot of thoughts are coming and going. I am not recording or registering any one of them. So this is called manas, mind stuff. The next one is buddhi. Buddhi means as soon as I decide to capture one of the thoughts and continue with that, oh, suddenly I remember that I forgot to buy this thing. Immediately the buddhi dictates that, yes, catch hold of this thought, get out of the house, take the car, go to the market, things start in a different way. So I get up from my seat immediately. So buddhi helps us to register or recognize one thought and start acting. So decisive faculty, that is what is called buddhi or intellect. Then the third one is chitta. Chitta means the memory. Memory where all the information are stored up, not all, exactly speaking, there are not all informations which can be stored up. We experience so many things during that day, but a few make a mark on our mind, just a few. Maybe one in a day or maybe not even one in a day, in 2-3 days one thought will make a mark, leave an impression on our mind. So, because that intensity of that thing is so much that it leaves a mark on our mind. Or if I do the same thing again and again, then it creates an impression automatically. You go on making the same line again and again, it becomes deeper and deeper and deeper, then it creates an impression. All these impressions are stored up in the mind, and that faculty is called the faculty of memory, chitta. Chitta is the word which is used in the Yoga Sutras. Second sutra says, yogaha chitta vrittihi nirodhaha. This is what is called chitta. We must know in detail so that we can refer to this afterwards. So this is what is called chitta, the hard disk of our system, where all the informations are stored up. Now whenever it is necessary, we can recall them. Then the fourth one is ahamkara, I consciousness. I. This is also something we will be discussing. That is a big subject in the Yoga Sutra. Now suppose this chitra has got this in memory. Now I will give you an example that how these things happen. Suppose I am just going on the road and someone comes and slaps me on the right cheek. What would be my reaction? That is the action, the impulse I have got. Swami Vivekananda has said that there is a calm lake and the surface is very calm and you throw a stone into it. An impulse which comes from outside and it creates a wave on the surface. What type of wave it is? A circular wave, and further waves, it goes on spreading waves in a circular motion. Circular motion. A circle in Sanskrit is called a vritta. Vritta. Chitta we have learnt, now vritta means vritti. These modifications on the surface of the lake, means on the mind, they are called vrittis. These things are there. Either from the impulses from outside, these vrittis are created, or with the help of impulses from inside, the vrittis can be created. Suppose some bubble comes up from below. and it bursts on the surface, creating the vrittis. So, impulses can come from outside or can come from within one's own self. Because there are enough material within in our hard disk, in the chitta, in the memory system, that can create vrittis. I am simply sitting and ruminating on the past. What happened to me 10 years before, and how that scoundrel gave a big blow to me and I could not retaliate. That is why it is there still. If I had retaliated, then it won't be there. But I could not retaliate. Now if he comes, I am so strong, but he won't be there. So the vrittis are coming from within myself, from the memory. Now see, the action has happened. Somebody has slapped me on the right cheek. What should I do? According to the physical laws, Newton's third law says, each and every action has its equal and opposite reaction. So give another blow. Does it happen like that? Rather, we give a few more blows. Because that happens. Why does it happen? Why does the reaction happen in that manner? That is a question. Now, similar thing should have happened in a different situation, but it does not happen. Suppose the mother is sitting there, the baby comes or child comes and kicks the mother. Does the mother kick back? Every action, equal and opposite reaction, kick the child. Does the mother kick back? So, mother knows how to hold back the reaction. So, therefore, there is a great truth about mind control. So, let us analyze these two events side by side. So, someone gives me a blow, and the scriptures say, particularly Christ says, whosoever slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. So, should we do that? Reaction is not like that. Reaction should be in a different manner. But see, there are two types of reaction. One prompts me to retaliate, another prompts me to take the child on the lap. So there is a system inside me which is prompting this thing. Now we go back to Swami Vivekananda's explanations. How the actions and reactions happen. You see, a person cannot be known by his actions. Our actions are all trained. Even if we know that in the next moment I am going to finish off this fellow, but still I will be a perfect gentleman outside. I can be. A professional murderer is a perfect gentleman outside. It does not create any repercussion in his mind. So actions will never prove. We are very much trained how to say hello, goodbye, thank you, oh, I am so happy to see you, all these things I will say. Because I have been trained in that manner, so actions have been trained. But reactions prove the person, prove what stuff we are made of. Reactions prove that. So here the reactions will prove why we should react in this manner, give two more blows or take the child on the lap. Reactions. Suppose this man has given me a blow, so what should I do? The information goes inside and there happens a quick scanning of the hard disk, and the report comes out immediately saying that this fellow took advantage of your modesty so many times. Now this is a time to teach him a great lesson. So you react in this manner. So the informations from there helped me to react in this manner. There are still other things involved in this. This is a very, very wonderful study. Swami Vivekananda says, suppose there is an object. I look at this object and recognize it. I look at the object and recognize it to be something. Suppose this is a flower. I have recognized it. Then the eyes have seen the flowers. And now this information is carried to the brain center, which are called the indriyas. the optical nerve. There at your center, at the center, this information goes. And from there the mind takes the information to the intellect. Because this is just an information. But the information has to be recorded properly and also diagnosed properly. So object, senses, eyes means instruments, and sense, the third one. Fourth one is mind. Mind is just like a servant. It goes back and forth with the information. It takes the information to the intellect. And now the intellect has to decide on the basis of its information available on the hard disk. It does a quick scanning and says this person took so many advantages before. So give him two blows. But at the same time something also happens very weird. It may not be only two blows, I may finish off with that fellow. Why does it happen? Or I may not do anything. There is a story like that. Not story, this incident happened. A very strong person, a good wrestler, he was just standing and talking with the fellow, and one young fellow, he was just a jogger. He was just going on jogging and saw this man standing and gave him a blow and went away. And this man looked at him and again started talking with his friend. Then his friend, why didn't you give him a blow? This fellow would be nowhere. He said, what can I do? I did not get annoyed at all. Because in Bengali they said, ki korbo, gusha utse na. Gusha means growth. So anger. So like that. So he was so strong, he did not think of retaliating. What is this fellow, small fellow has done, like that. So he knows how, because he is so strong, he knows how to control his reactions. Here, a weird thing happens. Swami Vivekananda says, when the buddhi or intellect is deciding on this information, then his sentence is like that. There flashes the idea of ego. In course of this decision, flashes the idea of ego. Suppose in the place of that man, there would be another child who would come and kick me, but that child is not my child. I would not feel that happy, but at the same time, okay, all right, I would say. But when it is my child, I take him on my lap. So, the same, if reaction does not happen, in case of a child of another person, I feel offended. But about my own child, I don't feel that. Because of that ego. Flashes the idea of ego. That this belongs to me and that does not belong to me. And everything is dependent on one thing. The hard disk information. The hard disk information says this is your child, that is not your neighbor's child. That's all. This is your child, that is your neighbor's child. So reactions should be different. And there this ego means mine or thine. Mine, selfish. It's the idea of selfishness. This is what is called I consciousness, ego. As long as we are not able to recognize all to be our own, this ego can never go. Sri Ramakrishna says that the ego has got two types, you know. One is what? A ripe ego, another is unripe ego. Unripe ego will say mine, mine, mine. Ripe ego will say thine, thine. Everything is Lord's, so this is also his, this is also his. So here the ego has to be trained and tamed, that is the idea of Yoga Sutras. So, these are the four faculties of the mind. Now, there are some other ideas about mind, we are not going into details. But now let us look at the nature of the mind. Here Swami Vivekananda makes a beautiful point. What does the mind do by nature? By nature. So nature is something very, 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 very essential and very important. What is the nature of the mind? He says mind is like a monkey. You can remember We have read about it many times. Perhaps mind is like a monkey. It is a monkey. And it is drunk. So it is overdrunk. So that is the condition of the monkey now. Now a scorpion has bitten the monkey. So it starts jumping about. And then a demon entered into it. So what happens now with the condition of the monkey? Terribly restless. Restless because of ego. Restless because of power hankering. Restless because of jealousy. These three things are there in the mind one after another and made it so restless. Now, this is the nature of the mind. But as we have seen that there is a hard disk in the mind and there are so many things written. So if there are so many impressions on the mind, what we can do with the help of the conscious mind, with the mouse, with the trigger of the mouse, what we can do? Delete some information. We can delete the information. Since we are the creators of the information, we have the right to delete it. We have the password to go into it and delete it. So with the help of the conscious mind, we can delete many information. That is the idea of abhyasena, practice. Practice will help us to delete. What type of practice? I need to delete this line, so go on deleting. Rather we make this line stronger and deeper. No, deleting has a different meaning. Suppose there is a rectangular grass lawn and I cross this lawn diagonally every day, then a small pathway will be, patch will be created, and dissecting the whole grass lawn into two triangles, will it look beautiful? Now I want that it should be whole. The grass should grow along my path. What shall I do? So I call some priests and start doing some yajna, grass growing yajna. So let the grasses grow, swaha, like that, you go on pouring clarified butter. Will it help? No. Then what I do? Then I go on walking along the road and praying to the Lord, oh Lord, help me to grow the grass. No. Then let me go on praying to the grasses, oh grass, please grow. Nothing is helping. What should I do? To delete this line, stop walking along this line, then the grasses will automatically grow. You did not do anything. They have the power to grow. Then do you say, I want to take a morning walk? No, walk. There are so many roads for walking, cycling, and so many skating. Go there, not here. So deleting means, if we do not pamper, do not inspire such things further, they will automatically die out. And that we can do with conscious effort, thinking on something else, not thinking on these things. And that is how we can help ourselves to do things. But well, now the question comes, we understand so far, but when we go try to practice things, things do not come in our way, come on our way. What happens? Now when we start practicing for a few days, there would be a lot of inspiration and we go on doing it. But slowly, we lose all inspiration, and then what happens? Then again back to the same square number one. Then what to do? Why does it happen? This is a kind of helplessness. In the Bhagavad Gita itself, Arjuna asks that, I know that this is the thing, but in spite of myself, I am not able to. Athakena prayuktoyam papam charati purushaha, he says. By what force a man is forced or guided to do things which are not permitted. Anichchannapi kaunteya, anichchannapi varsniya. O Krishna, in spite of ourselves, even though we do not want to, but we are not able to. Valadiva niyajita, perhaps by some force. Then Sri Krishna says the root causes of this helplessness. So, how does this helplessness? I want to, but I am not able to. This situation, how does it come? It comes because of lack of willpower. So, but we all of us have will, then why do you say that we do not have will? No, you have will, but there are certain things which are eating into the very vitals of your willpower. What are those things? Called pleasure pursuit. Pleasure pursuit is the thing which eats up our willpower. I want to go to jog on a different road, but I have some other engagements, I don't have time, so let me walk along this first. So this is the idea of pleasure pursuit. There are three words which say the idea of enjoyment, speak about the idea of enjoyment. One is called pleasure, another is called joy, and third one is called bliss. Bliss, bliss. The joy we get, with enjoyment we get with the help of our physical body is called pleasure. The enjoyment we get with the help of our mind is called joy. The enjoyment we get from spiritual field is called bliss. The difference between them is mental joy is superior to physical pleasure and spiritual bliss is superior to mental joy. Now let me give you an example, very gross example, every one of us know. We should not utilize our physical body in such a manner that it takes away our mental joy, because mental joy is superior. No one would like that. So you see, all the cases of HIV and AIDS, they are a very big proof of this. We are losing our mental peace, finally our existence, of everything, because we have misused our physical body. So these three things we have to know very clearly. And this idea has to be impressed upon the mind. With the help of the conscious mind and conscious effort, we can create lines undoing the earlier lines, undoing the earlier impressions. The hard disk is full. So delete something and re-record something there. So it will be like that. Now, this far we have explained the mind. We will go further with this later. Now we go back to the main Yoga Sutras, because we know now we will be able to refer to these varieties of position in course of our discussion. But just a quick look at what we have already discussed, that the mind is constituted of three gunas. They are sattva, rajas, tamas. And then it has got three levels. What are they? Conscious, subconscious and superconscious. Then it has got four faculties. What are they? Manas, buddhi, chitta, ahamkara. Means thinking mind, deciding mind, then the memory and the I consciousness, the ego. So, up to this we know. Now, with the help of conscious effort, we can create something which is really amazing. Let me cite two examples from two different sources. One is, you know the famous story when Swami Vivekananda placed a coin below the mattress of Sri Ramakrishna's bed. So, proper insulation is there. So, metal is there below the bed. Sri Ramakrishna did not know of it. He came and sat down there and jumped up as if being stung by a scorpion. Why did it happen? How did he know? How did he know about it? we will stop here, go to the next one. Then we will be able to explain this. This is a phenomenon. In the book, maybe Jungle Lore, you know, those who have read Jim Corbett, a great hunter, he lived in India. So Jim Corbett was a famous hunter, and his books are simply gripping. Each and every incident and narration is true there, because he faced those things. So he speaks about a beautiful phenomena. Once in the evening, his people came to him, servants and others who would help him to bring things from the forest, like that. So they came to him, and Corbett said, "Tomorrow morning you go and bring that deer I killed today evening. But this is lying there, it's so big I could not carry it myself. You bring tomorrow morning." Then they wanted to know the location of the deer. Then he explained, but these people are not so familiar with the forest. So he said, "Okay, I will make a mark on the road there. This road, when you go there, you will see the mark and follow that mark there. Just go into the forest through that corner." So then he wanted to do that. So when they left, he went to the forest. And before he went, it drizzled a little bit. And he went and he put a mark there and came back home. And next day, early morning, he was preparing to go out. So he was looking at his boots. And then suddenly he saw around the boot there was red mud stuck to the boot. So where from this red mud came? I never went through that way. How did it happen? Because this was my regular way, I went that way and put the peg there. But how did I go diagonally through the field? It is impossible. Why should I go diagonally through the field? And only there, inside the field, there is a place where this type of dust was available. So he said, "I must check it now." So two types of things are there. One is called investigation. You know, investigation, one is called just seeing, another is called observing. Seeing and observing, these two things are different. You know, there is a nice story. One medical teacher, he was teaching the students. Then first day he said, "I will check your tolerance of anesthesia, formaldehyde. So here is the anesthesia available. So do as I do and I will check your tolerance level." So the person put the finger and tested it and went and stood there, the doctor. And all the students came and tested and sat down, and they were feeling nauseating tendency, this thing, that thing. After some time the teacher said, "But it did not affect me, why did it affect you all?" Then they said, "No, you have done it so many times, that may be the reason." Then he said, "No, I asked you to observe, not to see. You have seen but not observed. What? While I dipped this finger, but I licked this finger. So that was the thing I wanted you to do. I would never ask you to taste anesthesia. I dipped this finger, but I licked this finger. You should have observed this." So like that, Jim Corbett went to observe why it happened in that manner. Now he discovered that due to last night rain, all the footmarks are visible. He saw before he walked that way, a tiger walked in front of him. And his footmarks were on the footmarks of the tiger. And when the tiger understood that somebody was following him, this fellow went down and hid himself or herself behind a bush. And from there it was lurking for this fellow to come and it would pounce upon him. But somehow something weird happened. Jim Corbett went to some distance. Then from there he took a detour through the field. He crossed the field diagonally there, went to the corner, put the peg, came along that diagonal and went back. And then the tiger, because Corbett used to be always alert in the forest, he knew the danger can come from anywhere. So he was very alert, therefore the tiger understood that this man is on his guard, he did not attack him. But this thing happened. But Corbett says, I did not know the existence of the tiger. But why did I take that? I made that detour. So he explains this. This is a beautiful observation. He says, people may say this happens due to the sixth sense, but I call it jungle sensitivity. Jungle sensitivity. Because he lived in that surrounding, his mind has been trained to be always alert and awake. This was not possible with the help of the conscious mind. Subconscious mind was awake, and the subconscious mind recorded the existence of that tiger. Here Sri Ramakrishna's case also almost similar. His conscious mind did not know, cannot know that there was a coin, but the subconscious mind could see through, was aware of it and saved him from this. So this way our mind can save us, provided we are able to train it with the help of the conscious efforts. Therefore, the second aphorism is just an answer through this. What is yoga? The first aphorism says, atha yoga anushasanam. Now, yoga has to be explained. What is yoga? Yoga chitta vrittihi nirodha. Yoga is cessation of modifications of the mind. Chitta vritti nirodha. Here, Patanjali does not say that cessation of all the modifications of the mind. He does not say. He says cessation of the modifications of the mind. Sarva chitta vritti nirodha is not said. Chitta vritti nirodha. Therefore, when the vrittis of the mind are quietened, what is that state and what is the guna at that time? When all the activities have stopped, the mind has become perfectly tranquil, then the mind has taken the form of sattva guna, perfect calmness, sattva guna. So, when the mind is perfectly calm, it proves that we have been able to come out of the grip of tamoguna and also the grip of rajoguna. Now we are in sattva guna. So we have crossed two barriers at the last barrier here. And when sattva guna is there, then it is prakashakam anamayam. Nirmalatvat, Sri Krishna says in the Gita, it manifests. And because it is so pure, and at that state also we experience samadhi, though the mind still continues there. Sattva guna, after all, is a guna and is a constituent of the mind, which is nothing but refined matter. Therefore, as long as matter is there and we are together with the matter, we have this intricate bond with the matter, we cannot say that we are free, we have attained freedom. No. But it is an experience of freedom, because the mind has become that transparent, clear. So, these are the two types of samadhi, where we experience perfect calmness due to the cessation of the modifications of the mind. That is what is called samprajñāta samādhi. Samprajñāta means samyak rūpena prajñā asti yatra. Samprajñāta means perfect knowledge is there, that I am experiencing the divine bliss. I am experiencing the divine bliss. But what is the goal of our knowledge? That I am the reality, I am the bliss. Aham Brahmasmi, they said. But it is not Aham Brahmasmi. Here I know that I am experiencing that bliss. I am not the bliss. I am the experiencer. So as long as this experiencer and experienced sense continue, so long this samadhi is called sampragnyata samadhi. And when that also ceases, then all the modifications of the mind, all war can be used. Ceases means what? Cease means what? The mind ceases to exist as it is. The mind ceases to exist because all the wool from the blanket has been picked up. And then what is there? The blanket is no more there. Therefore, what remains? The person who was picking the wool, he remains. So similarly, I remain. Sri Ramakrishna gives a beautiful example. For everything, we have to refer to Sri Ramakrishna because he is the person who clarifies everything beautifully. He says, you know the story of the three robbers, how beautifully he used three colors also, color codes, like we have got RGB color system. So here also three colors, black dacoit means maybe, I don't know from where he came. So he is a black dacoit means tamoguna, then red dacoit rajoguna, then white dacoit sattvaguna. So three of them attacked a traveler and robbed him of his things. And then what to do with this man? If we leave this man, allow this man to go, then he will immediately call police. What to do? Then this black dacoit tamoguna said, kill this man. Because after all, we have taken things and what is his, why should we leave him? Then he will inform, kill him. Then rajoguna said, no, don't kill him, we have robbed him. So just we will tie him to a tree and go away, so that he cannot release himself immediately, he cannot inform police, by the time we will be out of bounds. Okay, they accepted that and all those three of them, they bound this man and went away. After some time, this white dacoit came. White dacoit came and with lot of compassion said, you feel very much troubled, so much suffering, so I release you. Then he took him to the verge of the, led him to the verge of the forest. I will show you the way how we will go back home. Then coming to the edge of the forest, he says, there, over there, you see, your town, your house is there. Then this man was so full of gratitude, he said, why don't you come with me and be my guest? I will be happy to serve you. Then this dacoit said, no, I cannot go. I may be a compassionate dacoit, but the problem is that my name is also registered with the police there. So if I go there, they will arrest me. Therefore, you go alone, kevalam kaivalya. Tasmat tadrishehe kaivalyam, we referred to this yesterday, that tadabhavat, when the connection is lost, connection with the sattva-guna, the compassionate fellow who showed me where my home is, I sever my connection with him. Tad abhavat, sangyoga bhava, so I am disconnected. Hanam, this is what is called, I have achieved this disconnection. Tad drishehe kaivalyam, and then kaivalyam means alone. So I am what I am not connected with anything. So I go alone. So lone traveler. So I am what I am. I become that. So this is the idea here. Sampragnyata samadhi and asampragnyata samadhi. In the next discussion, we will take up the steps which will lead to the sampragnyata samadhi and finally asampragnyata samadhi. That is a beautiful study. And very graphic is the description there, so that we can match our experiences with the milestones. They have been numbered already. And when we look at the milestone and see this is number 3, then we know we are at, we have crossed 3 miles. So similarly, these things have been numbered, graphically numbered, and we can check our advancement with this picture. That will be very nice. So if you have any question, just.
Guruji, asapragnata samadhi, is that where this aham brahmasmi stage?
Aham brahmasmi state. According to Advaita Vedanta, that is aham brahmasmi state. That is not a state at all. A state is dependent of on conditions, but it is unconditional.
Maharaj, in the beginning when you were giving that example where the recovery of the patient was dependent on what his subconscious mind was getting the information from. So how do we compare then to the state where people they are in the vegetative state, so the life is kept by artificial rigging and instruments. Yeah. So, is the subconscious still alive and it is still gathering information?
Of course, of course. The mind is alive. Some after 20 years of coma, one person came back and said, first word he uttered, mom. And he could say, another report also came in BBC, they said one person was in coma for some time and his speech was impaired. He was able to know everything, but he was not able to speak. And the doctors and patients, all everybody and relatives, he is able to see, but he cannot say that I am alive, I am not, I can recognize everything, I hear everything, but I cannot speak. And afterwards when he got back somehow that power, then he laughed and said, yes, I knew what happened in front of me. So like that. And many things, in recent many discoveries are also proving that. But the fact is that the subconscious mind is always awake, it does not die. And when the mind dies properly, then the body also dies and we are free from the bondage. Means the jivatman, the self, goes out of this connection and then it dies.
Whereas then in that case, it is often we make the living will that I do not wish to live if I am in that coma state. So if subconscious mind is alive, then this would be considered a suicide, and suicide is the worst form of crime,
That is also a thing which should be decided. Medical science also, a lot of debate is there. This is, yes, if you want, you can kill yourself. Because this, the body is meant for a soul to work out its own karma.
Yes.
But in that state, the body or mind are not helping us to perform that job. Therefore, these are permitted by the scriptures. So, in olden days, people used to do prayopaveshanam. Means I will sit here, I won't eat anything, only drink, and taking God's name, I will pass out of the body. So, that is the idea. One can do that, because the body is no more helping me to work out my own karma. So that way one can choose to quit this body. But the idea is that by doing that I am going to go into another body, and I hope that by Lord's will I will be able to work out my karma, I will be able to live in a better way to fulfill my goal of spiritual realization. Then it is permitted.
Swamiji, I have two questions. One is that you have beautifully narrated a rasic mind is very active and sattvic mind is very active. How does the person, what practice should he or she use progress oneself from that toxic mind to sattvic mind? Is the practice associated with japa, or is the practice associated with some other activity that could elevate this person? person's state from logic state to vipassana state and to the sattvic state. Could you please expound a little bit on that?
Yeah. There are so many methods. They are all methods. Here in the Yoga Sutra, they have a few. They have, yesterday as I discussed, they have given 8 different methods, prescribed 8 different methods. Japam is one of them. Like tad japas tadartha bhavanam. Ishvara pranidhanadva is the first alternative. If you are not able to follow this very rigorous path of controlling the mind, then pray to the Lord, take His help, and then you proceed. Who is this Lord? How to know Him? Natasya vachaka pranava. He has a manifesting sound or word which is called pranava or omkara. Tajjapas tadartha bhavanam. So any kind of mantra is like that. So do japa of that, constantly dwelling on the meaning of that mantra, not on the words, but on the meaning. Tad artha bhavanam. And then it will help you to purify the mind, and when the mind is purified, finally the mind will kill itself, eliminate itself. So that is the way of achieving sattva guna or more concentration. Japa also is one of them. Otherwise, there are so many. If we have time during our discussion, we will discuss on those things. Otherwise, we can read the Raja Yoga book. They have narrated very beautifully all these different methods.
Thank you. My second question is something that you have said in another meeting on this. Well, the patient is being performed, and in certain cases, during the operation, patient dies or dies temporarily. What is the force that brings him back? How does he come back? And there have been cases that he came back.
But died.
What happens in that state, you know? Yes, there is a patient, he saves his life, and then with the efforts of doctors, yes, they are doing physical thing, but there is a force behind that he came back to life.
Yeah.
What is that? What's that phenomenon? How does that happen?
Yeah, this is a great phenomenon which was experienced by Ramana Maharshi in the very beginning. So he saw his body different from him. He saw the body lying down there, and it was in great pain. And he experienced that separateness, my soul and body separateness. And but somehow by some force it went inside. And that force is also explained, that by the force of that attachment, past karma, one cannot just wish to leave the body. So then Ichha Mrityu, they say. I cannot just choose to quit the body and myself. But the body and mind, they will decide that the soul has to go now. So this force brought him back to life, but he had that experience. So similarly, sometimes cases happen that person goes out of the body. And for a moment, but really speaking, he does not go out of the body. He is connected with the body, with that force, but he has an experience of outside body state. So he comes back. But otherwise, in many cases also you will see, after some resuscitating exercises and breathing, mouth breathing exercises, nothing happens. The patient does not come back. That is also a phenomena, because the soul chose to quit the body that moment. But here, it was an accident that it has gone out of the body, but it is still attached to the body. So it came back, because we performed these things, it got help. Otherwise also it would have come back.
In some cases people do remember, but in other cases patient doesn't even know that.
Ramana Maharshi remembered because he was of that level. But ordinary people will not be able to remember. Then they will be realized. But because of our karmas, we are not able to remember. All the experiences actually there. Sri Krishna says, all of these things I know, but you do not know. That is the difference between you and me. Like that. That is, Brahmakara Vritti is a term used by Vedanta, not by Yoga. And Brahmaloka is a term used by mythology, not by... But we can try to find parallels, what they generally want to mean. So it is like that. So Brahmaloka, I mean, after that you have an experience, but after that you don't return. Your experiences won't be of the phenomenal world. That will be of something different from phenomenal world, but still within the world, within concept of worlds, there are seven worlds above. So, Bhur Bhuvaswa Maha Jana Tapa Tapa Loka is Brahma Loka. And Satya Loka. These are Loka. Loka means places where you can enjoy. Loka. Lukyate bhojyate iti Loka. Where you see. Lukyate means see, enjoy, and also make and measure things and enjoy things. Bhoga. So they are called Loka. They may be higher states, but still there is the idea of enjoyment. We may not experience suffering, but still we will have to experience the happiness or enjoyment. You have to experience that. So, this type of experience of the mind continues. Mind enjoys, mind suffers. It will be there. So, this after the Satya Loka, then this Loka concept fails. Then what happens? Then the vritti also does not remain there. So, you are what you are.
Maharaj, sometime in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, I think that Brahma Loka almost seems to be a metaphor for realization of Brahman rather than for a place. Do you think?
Not exactly. When Loka word is used, then it is a place. Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punaravartino Arjunahar. In the Gita it says, even from the Brahma Lokas also, people have to come back. Come back means people have to experience the happiness, at least. Happiness of a little higher than the worldly happiness. But you are still enjoying. And as long as this enjoyment is there, you are bound to this enjoyment.
In this philosophy of reincarnation, in the next life, what are the things that you take from this life and go there? Is it just the character, or do you also decide the circumstances in which you will be born? But what I'm trying to say is, how do you select your parents or the atmosphere in which a person will be born?
Very good question.
Does that happen, or is it just a new life completely in a different place? But the old happens.
No. Nothing happens disconnectedly. Nothing will be created out of nothing. So, this is a very, very good question. Very good question. How to answer? It takes a long time. I will try to make it as short as possible, but it is a really very, very big discussion. There is a theory called Law of Karma. Law of Karma. In Western philosophy, you have this idea of free will and determinism. Free will is a concept which is very much researched upon by Immanuel Kant. And determinism, some other schools, they have tried to say. Now, the idea is, determinism is that our past is fixed, we cannot say that was not there, and future also is set. you cannot do anything. That is called fatalism, fate. That your fate is like that, at that time you should be there at that place, and then that person went there and he was killed. He cannot do anything more than that, or something else, because that is determined beforehand. So it is closed both sides. And free will also is a concept very, very clearly understood by law of karma, but sometimes, yeah, Kant also speaks very well about free will. The idea is free will. Of free will is, the question comes, first question is asked, how free is the free will? How free is the free will? So the answer is, suppose that there are two types of things. One is free from and free to. Free from and free to. Now, if I say the birds fly. Birds can fly, birds fly. This is the truth. But the thing, if you look at the conditions under which a bird can fly, conditions are that they are, birds are free to fly, but they are not free from wings. Wings are the conditions for them to fly. Therefore, they are not free from wings, but they are free to fly. Similarly, law of karma says that we are not free from our past, but we are free to undo whatever we have done. So this is the idea of freedom. Now, under that law of karma, whatever we do, we are responsible for that. Otherwise, we invoke God's grace, and God's grace can help us to undo the karma quickly, nothing more than that, but we have to do everything. So, the scriptures say, avashyam eva bhoktavyam kritam karma subhashubham. Whatever good works or bad works you have done, one has to enjoy or suffer the consequence, results. So, suppose I have done bad karmas, so I have bad impressions, and good karmas, good impressions. These two strands continue together. They never balance each other. In a modern accounting system, we have debit credit, and you find a balance. I have $100 in pocket, I have a debt of $80. So, in effect, I have a balance of $20. But in this case, it does not happen. Both continue simultaneously together. They cannot balance each other. I have to enjoy the fruits of my good deeds, I have to suffer the actions of my, results of my bad deeds. Therefore, even as I said, even in the Brahma Loka, when we continue to remain there, we are enjoying, still we are within the scope of this creation. And now, when these two strands are there, now the question is, when I die, which strand will be activated in my next life? That will depend on how I die in this life. That is
what. Sorry, what was the last thing you said?
How I die in this life. How I die in this life. Say, when I am dying with a thought, and I become unconscious and leave this body and take another body, and then immediately that is activated. With whatever consciousness I went, that is activated. That is said in the Gita, Sri Krishna says, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajatyante kalevaram. Ante means at the end of the life, when we are leaving the body, kalevaram, those thoughts which we are engrossed in, they will continue with us. And they will activate that strand in the next life. That is why Sri Ramakrishna gives a beautiful example. He says that the man is so materialistic, at the time of death, he will be always thinking of material things only. So he gives a beautiful example. The father is dying, the son is standing there and saying, Papa, please repeat God's name. So say, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Then he says, I cannot repeat so many words. Reduce the flame, it is consuming much oil. There was a lamp. So he is very much conscious of this material things. Therefore, at the time of death, that accompanies him, and that is the natural effect of the next life. Therefore, our karmas decide what type of parents we will get, what type of a body we will get. In our scriptures, they have said, particularly in the Garbhopanishad, it is said, then in the womb of the mother, the baby or the fetus is just an extension of mother's body, just the flesh of mother's body. But after at least 4 months, some days, soul enters there. So when I am taking a body, my karma will decide which body I should take, and then I would suffer or enjoy so that I am able to work out all my karmas and realize. Suppose I have done very bad things, so I will get a deformed body, I will be born as a handicapped person. Therefore, my karmas will be slowly reduced due to lot of suffering together. So this type, everything is decided by us. No one decides for us in that matter.
Now, I'm kind of confused now. One is karma, I understand that, that is clear. But this thought that is activated, you said. So
this is due to karma, because I have done all material duties and things, and that actually occupies my mind. So that karma helps me to think of that thing at the end. So that is how. That's why Sri Krishna says in the same verse, he says, Tada tadbhava bhavitam. He remembers God because all along he has been doing that, the same thing. So his karma was like that. There is nothing that, that is why through law of karma, all these rebirth and also deformities and privileges, everything can be explained.
Can be explained, you said?
Yeah, can be explained. Yeah. That's what we have done, and we are suffering or enjoying the consequences of our good or bad deeds.
Swami,
so
you said the soul enters into the baby when baby is 4 months old.
Four to something, 4 to 6, like that.
4 to 6.
Yeah. And even in medical science, they say there is a concept of viable fetus. When the fetus will be able to live outside mother's womb, that is what is called a viable fetus. Before that, it is just part of mother's body.
Mm-hmm.